Ewan, we need to talk. Concerned voice but stern eyebrows.
Hey, you my best mate. Have a can of tenants.
Ewan, this simply is not good enough.
Add a couple of bevies, so what's the big deal?
Only last week, I called for on-the-spot fines for drunken louts. Red cheeks, sweaty palms.
Hey, see you, big man.
Now, I never again want to hear of a son of mine being found helpless and covered in his own excrement.
Tony Leo's nappy needs changing.
Coming, dear.
Ringers.
Tim Hammond here, you know, and, people are saying I'm petulant and, after losing and breaking my racket, I didn't mean to smash my racket on my foot. I was aiming at the ground, but I missed.
Mr. Bond, the time has come to deal with you. I have a punishment that will make you squirm.
Do you expect me to talk?
No, Mr. Bond. I expect you to pay a £100 on-the-spot fine. Insert your cash machine card, Mr. Bond.
Wait a second, I've just remembered. I've got a couple of standing orders going out for my council tax and water rates tomorrow. If I take out £100... I'll exceed my overdraft limit.
All right, forget it, Mr. Bond. Forget the whole thing. Anyway, it wasn't a concrete proposal. It was only a metaphor. I'll just laser your genitals as usual, eh?
It's 59 minutes past 8, give or take an hour, and you're listening to... You're listening to the Today programme with me, John Humphreys.
And me, Sue McGregor. Now, we're joined in the radio car by William Hague. Mr. Hague, briefly, if you would, are you back in touch?
Yes, good morning, Sue. Well, what I would like to
I'm
say...
I'm going to have to hurry you.
Right, well, of course, what I was going to point out...
Yes, we were rather short of time, Mr. Hague, so let's move on. Where do you see your party going?
I think that...
Now, we've run out of time, but tell us all the ways in which you're going to improve the country's fortunes in one word, yes or no?
Yes, I...
William Hague, thank you.
Sue, why do we always have to hurry everybody on this programme? If we've got a good interview and we're running a bit late, why don't we go on a few minutes extra?
Well, I'll tell you why. Because if we failed to control time on the Today programme, the news would be late, then Desert Island Discs would be late, and the Archers would be late, and Woman's Hour would become Woman's 59 Minutes. Chaos would reign. Confusion, hatred, civil war. Heavens would rent and the mountains would be torn up from their place and hurled into the sea. The sun would be darkened, and havoc would rule the universe.
Right. Best move quickly onto the weather, then.
Hello and welcome to Changing Rooms with me, Smiley Carol Smiley. Now, this week the team have travelled all the way to the planet of Gallifrey to the home of the Doctor.
Yes. Hello, Carol.
So, shall we go inside and see what our designer Linda Barker has been doing?
Oh, my God. What have you done to my TARDIS?
Well, Doctor, the first thing we noticed was that it was considerably bigger in here than we thought from the outside. So we put in some extra walls to make maximum use of the space, which I think works really well. In the middle, there was a horrible 70s style up and downy thing, so we've ripped that out. And we've replaced it with this really built-in shelving unit, which you can see. I've used the this really lovely ragging effect on, which I think works really well. And I wasn't very happy with the pure whiteness of everything, so I've done this really sweet stenciling all over, which I think really sets off the pine scatter cushions, which I've put all over the multidimensional interstitial gravity drive, which I've actually recovered in leopard print muslin, and I think it works really well. What do you think?
What do I think? I think I'll be the laughingstock of the galaxy. I shall be cast out of the Time Lords for this. And by tampering with the design and technology of the TARDIS, you may have inadvertently caused the Eye of Harmony to open, and I may be powerless to stop the world from being destroyed. We shall all be at the mercy of the Master, Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen. Although I have to say I do like that ottoman. Have you got it in fuchsia? BBC Radio 4. And now, book at bedtime. Tony Blair reads the last page of Ken Follett's The Man from St. Petersburg.
Felix doesn't manage it, the woman betrays him, and the police were in on it. I'll be spoiling the ending of another Ken Follett book tomorrow. Big grin.
Hi, Ginger.
Hello there, is that Ginger maker of fine television programmes?
Yeah.
Listen, it's Frank Skinner here. Well, what it was, I just had a programme idea for you. The basic idea is you've got me in the studio in front of a studio audience, and I sit there on the sofa.
Yeah.
And that's about it. That's essentially it.
I could put you through someone's voicemail.
What do you think? Do you think it's got legs, that idea?
I mean, well, I don't know. I'm not head of production, you see.
Well, I know, but, you know, just tell me if you thought I was in the right ballpark.
Yes, sounds good.
That's not bad, is it? I mean, I don't really think I should say anything either.
Right, okay.
Because saying things on TV programmes, it's all been done, hasn't it?
That's true.
So, yeah, I just sit there and I don't say anything at all.
All right.
And could you provide a TV? Because, you know, I mean, if I was sitting there not doing or saying anything, I might fall asleep. Thanks very much. You know, it's great when, you know, people like you can give the go-ahead for a show like this.
Walking along the street, swigging from a bottle of Alco Pops, to which the Prime Minister replied, "Just you wait till I get you home." And that's the news, but now sport, and we can cross live to the BBC's Zurich correspondent for the latest on England's bid to stage the 2006 World Cup.
Good day, Charlotte. I'm afraid it's bad news. No, well, little Bobby Charlton worked all the way through the night, just trying to breathe some life into the bid. But in the end, it was just too feeble. And you know something else, Charlotte? The bid was a little bit like Bobby's hair, just too weak to survive. In the end, our chances just slipped away in the night. It's very sad.
Hello and welcome to Lords, and as someone who has followed England over the years through thick and thin, it is with a heavy heart, I must tell you, I've never seen such a lamentable display.
Yes, but Blowers, you won. England won.
Well, never mind that, Richie. Mrs. Ivy Mead of Chippenham has the effrontery to send me in a cake which, whilst purporting to be homemade, is in fact clearly a Sainsbury's own brand.
Yes. Blowers, there's more to life than cakes.
Well, yes, indeed. There's scones, there's fruit scones, fondant fancies, ring donuts, chocolate eclairs and almond slices.
Fred Truman, let me turn to you for a bit of sanity. England's victory, your thoughts?
Well, as the England team celebrates what is a truly historic victory, there's only one real question in everyone's mind.
Can they repeat the success in the third test?
No. What kind of sandwiches did they have during the lunch break?
Dr. Lecter, you use your powers and your insight to try to get inside other people's minds, but what about you? Have you ever turned that searching gaze on yourself?
Gladys, a censor, tried to test me once. I flog-marched him to a cash point and made him pay a £100 on-the-spot fine.
Hello, it's Gary Lineker here. Well, it's been a great final. France scoring in the 93rd minute. Gentlemen, can any of you make a comment on the match without saying the real winner is football?
Well, France may have won the game, but... but the real winner was... Well, no, I can't, Gary. It's physically impossible.
Martin O'Neill?
I can beat Alan Hansen there. He went seven words before he said the real winner was football. Now, I think...
Yeah, hold on, Martin. You said it there.
What?
The real winner is football.
No, that doesn't count. I was quoting Alan Hansen when I said the real winner was football. So that counts as Alan saying it again, and so he said the real winner is football twice now. So Alan comprehensively loses, and although I win, the real winner was football.
BBC Radio 4. The news with me, Brian Perkins. Part man, part machine. The headlines, the long-running radio series Farming Today has been stolen. Police say that Helen Bowden, the controller of Radio 4, left the programme unattended outside the Anne Summers shop in Charing Cross. Here's Charlotte with the details.
The theft comes at an embarrassing time for Radio 4, as it occurs right in the middle of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle Week, creator of the world's greatest detective.
Bergerac?
No, not Bergerac, Brian. Sherlock Holmes.
Don't diss me, woman. If I say John Nettles is the literary world's definitive sleuth, then he is.
In a dramatic twist to the story, I, Charlotte Green, like Sherlock Holmes, have solved the mystery. I can reveal that Farming Today was stolen by none other than Brian Moriarty Perkins.
Damn you, Green. How did you find out?
Elementary, my dear Perkins. I just followed the sound of whinging farmers and the smell of silage.
And I would have gotten away with it too if it hadn't been for your pesky meddling. The headlines again. Farming Today has been found. Tied up in my dungeon. Watch out, you and yours. I'm coming for you. Next.
Hello, I'm Alastair Stewart, and welcome to Crash Bang Wallop, What a Pile-Up. 30 minutes of high-speed chases, flashing lights, sirens, and twisting, burning metal, with a token safety message at the end to make you feel better about watching cheap rubbish like this. In this next clip, keep an eye on the little bald man in the old-fashioned car with the shaky wheels.
Watch out, Waldo! Damn traffic lights don't make them like they used to. Hand me my elephant gun, Waldo!
Thankfully for law-abiding drivers, Mr. Magoo is now safely behind bars in what he seems to think is a really terrible five-star hotel.
You're gonna do what to me in the showers? What kind of broom service do you call that? Hey, Waldo!
And here we see Michael Schumacher in the Ferrari, followed by Mika Häkkinen and Rubens Barrichello. And where are the Britons? Jenson Button, Eddie Irvine and David Coulthard. Oh! And sensational news. They can't afford British petrol, so they've taken the bus. And... nowhere to be seen, but now three British drivers have come along at once, and it looks like Button's slowing down for a pit stop, and oh no, they've stopped to pick up an old lady. So number one is Schumacher, two is Häkkinen, and number 72 is for Shepherd's Bush.
So, you
You finally lured me here to your secret base. What are you going to do with me, Blofeld?
Well, be patient, Mr. Bond. We can promise you what should be a truly fascinating morning's torture. Looking up from my concealed mountaintop base, I can see there's plenty of sunshine, a fair breeze blowing in from the west, and, of course, lots and lots of people in orange tracksuits who never speak. So, oh, there's a pigeon walking across that clifftop. Fire missile one. Oh, and a lovely shot there, through mid-off from Rocket 9. That really hit the pigeon for six.
Tell me, Blofeld, what made you into such an evil, twisted supervillain?
Well, old boy, wouldn't watching the England cricket team day in, day out send you completely around the twist? Yes, I have gone completely potty. Oh, look, another pigeon.
You fiend, Blofeld.
And may I take this opportunity to thank Mrs. Beryl Theakston of Chalfont St. Giles for sending in what really is a lovely homemade torture device. And I love the detachable spinning blades, and I'll obviously be having a slice of Mr. Bond with one later.
Hello, I'm Melvin Bragg, and this is my hair. And so, we look to the stage. Kelsey Grammer's Broadway adaptation of Macbeth has recently been described as rubbish by the American critics, and total crap by me. But it has inspired more stars of the small screen turning their hand to the bard.
Alas, poor Yorick, I knew him, Horatio, a fellow of infinite jest, of most excellent fancy.
My God, I don't believe it! Yorick! Dead? I was only talking to Mrs. Warboys about him this morning.
And while you're at it, Hamlet, can you please clear up all of those bloody slings and arrows of outrageous fortune? They've landed in my bloody back garden again. And I don't want to see that Othello chap hanging around here either. I don't trust them foreigners, you know, very big hands.
Basil? Basil? Wherefore art thou, Basil?
Yes, dear? Yes?
Oh, sad, sad, sad. Come and have a look at this. See how she leans her cheek upon her hand. Oh, I want a glove upon that hand. Oh. I might touch that cheek. Oh, my God.
Why don't you shut your face, you bleeding old puff?
Happy birthday, Victoria. Here's your present.
Oh, thanks, David. It looks really nice. But, David, you know my birthday isn't till April.
Yeah, I know. I worked it out. May, June, August, April.
No, it was our anniversary this week, David.
Amazing, isn't it? Only seems a year ago we got married. And now it's our anniversary.
Oh, but do you know which anniversary it is?
Yeah, it's our wedding one.
Oh, you stupid footballer, I meant what sort. You see, it's our paper anniversary.
Oh, right.
And do you know what it'll be next year?
Let's see. Will it be our wedding anniversary again?
That's right, well done, yeah. You see, I told you weren't as stupid as Phil Neville.
Hello, and welcome back to Police Crash Bang Wallop. Remember, the worse you drive, the better our ratings. Next up, this bunch of boy racers flagrantly disregard the rules of the road. But it was no laughing matter for a certain Luke and Blubber Bear. As they were forced off the road by Professor Pat Pending's converter car's telescopic arm, complete with boxing glove. Yet when they were stopped, they were repentant.
Drat! Double drat!
Minutes later, this boy racer was spotted tailgating, clearly intending to drive her off the road.
You're not going to run little old me off the road, are you, can, sir?
That's right, I'll get you, Penelope Pitstop!
Coming up next week, what happened when this brightly coloured camper van was chased by this headless horseman along the motorway?
Sykes! Scoob! If Freddy doesn't get us off the M25, we're doomed!
Eastside Marriott, this is Alan Reservations. How may I help you?
I am the doctor.
Yes, doctor.
I needed some accommodation, please.
For what arrival date, sir?
Let me see. For the 62nd of Julemba 3760.
You repeat that again, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. That was the Gallifreyan calendar. I mean, tomorrow.
For how many nights?
For three.
One moment, I'll check for you.
Thank you. Are you a droid?
No, I'm not.
There was something in your voice which suggested the use of cybernetics. I must have been quite wrong.
Okay. Were we connecting in some way, or...? Okay. I do have availability. Tuesday the 4th, for tomorrow evening, the rate would be $199 per night, sir.
That is excellent.
Okay.
Some of the very best rates in the universe.
Just about, sir. Your last name?
I am known only as the Doctor.
Okay, I would need a sort of full name, sir.
The Doctor.
And your first name?
The. The Doctor.
The Doctor.
Yes.
Doctor Who?
Yes!
I was sharing a pot of Earl Grey with Thora Hurd after the village fete just the other day, when a bishop came on the wireless criticising the new Harry Potter book. He said that the popular work of children's fiction encouraged youngsters to dabble in black magic. Thora sighed audibly as she retrieved a finger of Scottish shortbread from the pyramid cake stand. Alan, she said, why can't the church be more flexible when it comes to non-Christian worship? Besides, she said, everyone knows that Satan is our friend. I concurred with a nod, and my mind was cast back to a warm July evening in 1958, when the Castleford Ladies' Satanic Circle spent an exhausting evening dancing naked round the campfire. Thora, their high priestess, smeared herself with the blood of a sacrificial Persian blue called Tibbles that Mr. Pettifer from number 42 had kindly donated. Having had no luck in summoning up Beelzebub, Thora began strapping Mr. Pettifer, who by this time had covered himself in excrement, to a large stone altar. Suddenly the dark overlord did indeed rise from the fiery pit of Hades. So as Thora tapes the skull of a sheep to her head and begins chalking a fresh pentangle on my Axminster, I'm glad that being a child of Satan hasn't hampered her career. Mind you, if someone ever did have the presence of mind to play songs of praise backwards and clearly hear the words, join with us to suck on the teat of the cloven beast, that might be another matter entirely. But of course they won't, will they?
And finally, the British land speed record has been broken, and we can go over live to the attempt now.
Right, OK, thank you, Charlotte. Yes, it's me, Clive Anderson, doing 600 words in under 2 seconds, but that's because I haven't got a neck, so the distance that the words travel from my voice box to the outside is, far less than on ordinary people. So this is me, Clive Anderson, going far too quickly. This is me, Clive Anderson, saying good night, and good night. Thank you.
Clive Anderson there. When they said some sort of speed record had been broken, I thought they were talking about Daniela Westbrook. Ha ha. Seriously, though, if you want some gear yourself, I can put you in touch with the right people. I've got a finger in every pie around here, you know. Not Jenny Murray's, though. She won't have any of it. You see, I'm the Don, head of the Radio 4 family. That John Humphreys tried to muscle in, but let's just say I made him an offer he couldn't refuse. Waking up to find Sue McGregor's head in your bed. Well, that puts the fear of God into any man.
I
I'm Kirsty Warwick, but I need no introduction, and neither do my red pouting lips. Tonight, I'm talking to Ross Kemp. Ross, you've broken free from the soap opera mould. How did you do it?
Well, it's my enormous range. And my enormous range.
Let's just take a look now at your interpretation of Algernon and the importance of being earnest.
The truth, my dear Ernest, is never pure and rarely simple, so just leave it.
Or your classical debut as Mr. Knightley in Jane Austen's Emma.
Your rudeness to Mrs. Bates was shameful, and if you do it again, I'll have you, you slag.
And your current hit show as a heroic lawyer.
Your Honour, I ask the court's permission to leave it, you slag.
Do you think you strip bare your very psyche in these roles?
Strip what bare? You saying I'm some kind of pervert, you smug Scottish care? What? Get down them stairs like Tiff! So sorry.
And now here's Thora Heard with the Radio 4 appeal.
Please listen to Radio 4. Oh, please. Go on, loves, we're desperate. I know you and yours is on for 5 long hours a week. Melvin Bragg keeps popping up all the time. And Thought for the Day is tedious tripe. But please listen. Please.
Well, good day and welcome back to Animal Hospital. No more news about Tibbles the Persian Blue. But we've just had a little chap brought in. Oh dear, looks like he's in a very bad way. Just look at his white little face and his little pink eyes. Looks like his constitution was just too weak for all the Alco Pops he'd consumed. And while his mates partied till dawn celebrating the GCSEs, little Ewan just didn't make it through the night. Oh, it's so sad. Funny, though.
You've been listening to Dead Ringers, starring John Coleshaw, Phil Cornwell, Jan Ravens and Kevin Connolly. The associate producer was Adam Bromley, and it was produced by Billy Mad Dog Dare. The writers were John Holmes and Andy Hurst, Neff Fountain and Tom Jameson, John Coleshaw, Simon Blackwell, Dave Cohen and Paul McKenzie, Jess Foster, Lawrence Howarth, Sean Pye, Richard Webb and Henry Naylor.
And in a moment on Radio 4, The Archers. While Ruth fears the worst, Eddie has bought a high-powered rifle and built an effigy of Brian Aldridge out of mashed potato in his bedroom. Sid has noticed that his coffee has a strange hint of cyanide. That's The Archers at 7:05. Or alternatively, you could just swallow some pills and take a bath with your toaster. I know which I'd prefer.